Hooray!
We love it in the city of A.
Hooray!
We love it in A.
Welcome to the pod, Iowa State fans. Hooray! Truly, hooray for Ames. How about those Cyclones? How about those Cyclones? How about those Peacocks?
We got all kinds of stuff going on.
We got a lot to discuss. We got the swimming you were at. We got other events. We got March Madness. We can start with Iowa State. 2 wins last year, was that right?
2-22 last year.
How many? 2-22?
Yep.
Yeah, and now they're in the Sweet 16. Pat Forty declared them terrible, said they would not get out of the Milwaukee Regional. You were wrong about that and many other things. I was all right except when I picked Kentucky to win the national championship. That went well.
Other than, you know, that pesky second-place team from the Mid-Atlantic Athletic Conference.
Metro Atlantic. Yeah, so let's do that. Which one's a bigger stunner? That a 2-win team last year could go to the Sweet 16, or that St. Peter's could go to the Sweet 16?
Oh, it's St. Peter's. I mean, the MAC, not to be confused with the MAC, MAAC, has never, and it's been around since 1980, has never had a Sweet 16 team. And St. Peter's last year in the Ken Pomeroy rankings was number 222. The year before that, 194. The year before that, 316. Among the very, very worst teams in America. And now, you know, if you saw the pictures of their gym, the Run Baby Run Arena, compare that to Rupp Arena, pretty shocking difference. So for them to be there, it's phenomenal. It's glorious. It would have been a real shame if we didn't have one of those complete outlier, you know, smaller programs from a smaller conference in there. As it is, we have many underdogs. This has actually been one of the more tumultuous tournaments we've ever had. But these are most of them, the 10 and 11 seeds advanced are from power conferences. But St. Peter's, whoa. We do love you in Ames, and we love the city of Ames, but the Jersey City gang going to the Sweet 16 is the most amazing thing in this tournament.
You're not impressed with plucky underdog Michigan as an 11 seed? Yeah. I hate those 11 seed. Well, Sully really hates Michigan as an 11 seed, and we'll get to that.
Sure does.
Yeah, the teams that just underachieve and then end up as an 11, and then they get their crap together and start playing like they're supposed to.
Like UCLA last year.
Yeah, exactly. Like UCLA last year. I have been to St. Peter's. I've actually been there. Yes. I walked across it in 33 seconds and then went on my life in Jersey City. It has an endowment of $37 million. Coach K makes $10 million a year. Run Baby Run Arena harkens back to the 1968 St. Peter's team that averaged 94 points a game and was deemed the Run Baby Run team. And they upset Duke in the 1968 NIT quarterfinals.
Whoa, okay. You got a little history here.
Yeah, that's why they got the Run Baby Run. 2,600 students, commuters.
Yeah.
There's no godly reason that they should be any good, except they're located by a lot of players, and they got Shaheen Holloway as their coach, man.
At least for a few more days.
Until he goes to Seton Hall. Holloway, if you don't remember him as a player, one of the best high school guards I've ever seen.
Yeah, he was outstanding.
He's an incredible basketball player, but if you see him on the sidelines, he's like 5'9". He says he's 5'10". And so there just was only so far he was really going to go. I mean, you can make the NBA at 5'10 or under, but it's, you know, he wasn't that good. But he was, I mean, if this kid's 6'2", he's made, you know, a quarter billion playing in the NBA. Incredible player. And I just loved his team's really well coached.
Yeah.
And he talks about how fearless they are. And he said, "We're not scared. I got a bunch of Jersey and New York kids."
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the victories, they should have faded against Kentucky 15 times.
Oh.
I think Kentucky played that bad.
No. I mean, you
didn't play well, but, you know, for a 2 to lose to a 15, we have seen 2s just be garbage. I didn't even think Kentucky was garbage. I didn't think they could play a lot better and should have won. But there was a lot of St. Peter's just beating them, and they really beat Murray. It wasn't like just some lucky shots or something like that.
No. I mean, they made some outstanding plays, and they showed great poise and resilience. I mean, we have seen that game 100 times, and in 97 or 98 of those 100, the plucky underdog that's been hanging on and hanging on can't quite finish. You know, they can't make the plays at the end. The other team makes the big ones. They're too big, they're too fast, they're too strong, whatever. That was not the case. They did make
overtime usually gets them.
Yeah, right. When that game went into overtime, that's what I thought. Oh, well, Kentucky win by 6 or 8.
Yep.
And no, they just kept making the plays. I mean, it was a wonderful, wonderful performance.
The Peacock. You know why they're named the Peacock?
I don't.
Okay. More St. Peter's trivia. It is not because of the peacock, the animal. I mean, it is kind of, but it was the school, the land that the school was on was once owned by a man named Michael Rennerson Paw. His last name is P-A-U-W. Last name means peacock in Dutch.
Really? Okay.
There you go. The student newspaper used to be called the Powwow. That was the name. It's funny. Now the St. Peter's Tribune.
Yeah. Funny you mentioned that. I had occasion to write about St. Peter's once. I haven't been to the campus, but I wrote about them, and I interviewed somebody from the student paper in 1995 when they made the tournament on a buzzer-beating shot by a ponytailed player named Mike Frensley. And I called the student paper. I'm in Louisville. I just was captivated by the whole scene. So I called the student paper, and I'm like, so, you know, what was campus like? And woman's telling me. And then I said, well, you know, what'd you think watching the game? She's like, yeah, I was at the paper, so I couldn't go to the game. So I'm watching, and I look up, and it's like, oh, that's Mike from English class who made the winning shot. Like, that's St. Peter's, right?
That's 2,000
people.
Yeah. That's why we need to never get rid of these things. Right. So the fact, and I love it, they had like a spirit squad, but they couldn't go because they couldn't afford it. And then somehow there was like a Peacock Network or somebody sponsored them to take a bus ride through the night to Indianapolis. And now the game is in Philly. We'll see how long St. Peter's can last. But the fact the game is, you know, within drivable distance is just great.
Yeah.
They get to sop up a whole year and they get Purdue. You know, they play Purdue.
Everybody who's ever had any connection to that school should be in Philadelphia.
Yeah, just awesome. Awesome. This is what it's all about. So, yeah, Iowa State, we love you. We love you more than the actors in the not actors, your former citizens who bailed on you. I don't want to hear. I'm going to look up on their social media feeds all these people that are in that Hooray Ames video that moved. Are they still claiming allegiance to Ames and Iowa State?
I'm sure they are. I'm sure we know these type of people. Opportunists, grifters.
The basketball team became what the football team was supposed to be.
That's right. That's exactly true. And I gave this Iowa State team no chance. As you said, I did say on the air. But these were their March performances before the tournament. Lost to Oklahoma State, who wasn't that good. 53-36 at home. They scored 36. They lost to Baylor, 75-68. And then in the Big 12 tournament, they lost to Texas Tech, 72-41. They lost by 31 points the last time they played. Then they went out and beat LSU in Wisconsin. Great defensive team, horrific offensive team.
Yeah, scored 59 and 54 in victories, gave up 54 and 49. Wisconsin's gone. Wisconsin's like my least favorite college basketball team, so I'm never sad to see them.
No, they're brutal.
They're a tough watch. That was a tough watch. It was a lot of tough. There was some great games. There was also just horrendous officiating.
Yeah.
Horrendous officiating. And then the replay reviews. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
And I don't even like the replay. The replay review is that they'll overturn the call and it'll technically be the right call. Like it'll skim some guy's fingertip and actually be off him. But only because some guy just like mauled him in a foul and spiked it off. And then they can't review that. So you're like, this is crap.
Yeah. And the ball being pushed out of someone else's hands, but last touching the fingernail of the other guy, that the other guy is the one knocking it out of bounds. That's where that stuff just drives me nuts. And, you know, and John Gassaway covered college basketball for a while for ESPN, made a good point on Twitter. He brought up like the 2011 Big East tournament game where Rutgers got completely robbed against St. John's and there was no replay review and people would lose their minds if that happened in the NCAA tournament now. But there has got to be a happy medium between no review and too many reviews that take too long. We've got to find a way to make review more efficient and quicker. Just, you know, they've got to speed those things up.
I mean, it's tough because, you know, like if you're in the game, you work your whole life for this game, you can wait an extra 30 seconds.
Absolutely.
Right? But, and if you're a gambler, all of a sudden this becomes very arbitrary. And they're, you know, they're all pretty much embracing gambling. Oh, there's no gambling ads during the NCAA. That was interesting. I saw no gambling ads. We can get to some ads. But, like, it was hard. Like, that the Arizona-TCU game was hard to stay up for on the East Coast. It just, like, you know, it's late.
Yep.
I'm exhausted from sitting around watching so much basketball. It's very tiring. And
it's hard. Yeah. It's hard. It's not easy watching 16 hours a day, I'm telling you.
That game was bonkers.
Oh, unbelievable.
TCU, I don't know how it wasn't a foul at the end of regulation. I don't. And all the calls weren't for Arizona. Some were against Arizona. It was just, this is a foul, and then, it's, you know, there's a reach-in foul, and then some guy just gets mauled, and it's no foul. No idea what's going on. That was a tough one, but that was a huge win for Arizona.
Yeah, I mean, that game, yeah. I mean, like, TCU was one of those teams you just start loving when you, the more that game went along. And they got that 6'11", 268-pound center who looks like he's probably more like 288 and used to be 348. You know, and they're just playing their guts out, and they're right there. They're in the game, and it was a terrible last possession. I believe it was a foul, but it also could have been over and back, backcourt violation. And I'm not sure I wanted to see, would have liked to have seen TCU get rewarded for such a lousy last play.
You know, it was a foul at midcourt, right? So it's like, it's sort of like, what are you doing out there?
Right. I mean, the whole last play was just wild chaos. Then Arizona's flying back down the court with the clock going off and like, shoot the ball, shoot the ball. He just kept going and then dunks it too late. I mean, it was.
That was survive in advance.
If ever there was one.
If there ever was one. So we have TCU didn't pull it out, but pretty good day for the pretty good weekend for the Big 12. Let's go kind of conference by conference. Right? We mentioned Iowa State is in. Kansas is still in. Baylor lost, obviously. Texas Tech is still in. Houston, which is going there soon and very well could beat Arizona. If Arizona had trouble with the tenacity of TCU, where do they see strap Houston? Up. Yeah. That was a good prep for Arizona because Houston is just a problem.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't think they're going to win it, but do I not want to play those guys.
Yeah. No, they are athletic and vicious and get after everything all the time. It's a classic Kelvin Sampson team. It really is. And the thing that, like, this is really one of his best coaching jobs because they had two major injuries, two of their best players gone for the season in, like, December and January. And I talked to him February 1st, and he sounded pretty down about it. Like, we basically don't have enough bodies. We can't practice full time. I'm just trying to manage games so that we're in the second half in them. And for a while, that was true. I watched him a couple times like, oh, boy, they don't have much. And now they just look totally re-energized. And so he's found some depth out of somewhere and rearranged roles and got guys playing at a high level. And they are going to get after Arizona, and we'll see how Arizona responds to it.
Yeah, that's going to be a good one. We'll preview next round going forward. But that, I thought, you know, decent weekend for the Big 12. One other positive I wanted to mention is Miami. They're going to play Iowa State. Miami, if not just this team, but this program nearly got destroyed the FBI scandal. They were linked in there. They were written in there. The initial indictments was all that mentioned Miami a bunch. And as the cases went on, there was nothing on Miami, virtually nothing. And it was kind of proven that the guy who kept talking about Miami was just making it up. And there wasn't any evidence against Miami. While there was enormous amounts of evidence about everybody else, they never had anything come out about Miami. And Miami kept saying, we're clean, we didn't do it, we're not getting that kind of help, blah, blah, blah. But that really hurt their program.
Yeah.
Because they're not Kansas and can just roll through it. So for Jim Larrañaga and Miami to have survived that and regrouped and are now a potential, you know, they get an 11 seed Iowa State for the Elite Eight, would be would be, it's just massive for that program. And it says a lot about Larrañaga and the staff there and everybody that they could survive that, because that isn't easy to do. And they really did get screwed. I mean, it just never came out that they did anything.
Right.
And they never should have been mentioned in the first place.
Yeah, they had one player, I think, had some ties to Christian Dawkins, but, you know, that was really outside of, and he was declared ineligible outside of the purview of the staff. And then, yeah, it was Nasir Little's recruitment where Miami got pulled in. He ended up going to North Carolina, but it was Arizona that was, like, trying to find out, is Miami paying him?
Right, and his handler was saying that probably you're not going to be able to do as well as Miami, but they're really, it was all a bluff, and that's all that goes on in these things. So that's a great win for Jim Larrañaga and Miami.
It's huge.
To rebound and hopefully go forward. I saw he got an extension, and with that behind him, that's a solid program that should keep going.
He's a great coach, and this is what, so they had won 20 games in a row, four straight years. The scandal hits. People, they're transferring, they can't recruit. Their next 3 years, 14 and 18, 15 and 16, 10 and 17. They finally get out from under it this year, have a good team, get in the tournament, and now, boom, 25 and 10 and going on. And, man, they were so fearless against Auburn. They were like, yeah, Auburn, you may have two first-round draft picks and a bunch of other super athletes. We're good, too, and we're athletic, and we're just going to go with you and see how it turns out. And they embarrassed Auburn. Auburn quit at the end of the game. That was really an embarrassing last 4 or 5 minutes, I thought, for Auburn, for a team that had been that good to just give up. And they just gave up layup after layup, fast break after fast break, took terrible shots. So kudos, though, to Miami and Jim Larrañaga, who's been a very good coach for a very long time.
Miami knew they had Auburn beat. Like, that whole second half, there was a play in the second half. I don't think it was in the last five. I think it was maybe like 8 or 9 minutes left. They were up about 12 or 10. And there was a loose ball, and they threw a pass down. They had a guy breaking for an easy dunk, and they overthrew the pass. I can't remember the exact sequence.
Yeah, they were up 12 when that happened. Yes,
I think they were 12. And now, normally, if you're springing the upset, that is like, oh no, we need every point. And they flash over to Larrañaga, and he's just laughing.
Yeah,
and the players are like, yeah, all right, we'll get the next one. It wasn't like, oh no, we just lost 2 points. It was like, we're going to keep doing this to Auburn.
Yeah,
I think you had the best point about Auburn. The NCAA basketball tournament was not held in Auburn. Yeah. If it had been, they were really good at home and not so good. All right, this is too much positive.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay, let's start
killing people.
Sully, you've been noticeably silent. I think we spent a lot of time this year on the SEC talking up Kentucky, Tennessee, and Auburn.
Mm-hmm.
And they went a combined 2-3. Kentucky with the disastrous loss to St. Peter's.
Worst loss in school history, but who's counting?
Worst loss in school history. Stunner.
Cats fans, I think you might have brought up the point that they followed the worst year in program history by the worst loss in program history. Oh boy.
From 9-16 last year to losing to St. Pete this year.
Not good. Not good. Enormous pressure now on John Calipari next year. Like, it's like, you bet. I mean, because this was the team that was pretty likable and played pretty well. And again, I thought they would do fine. Yeah. And if they could have just survived that, they very well might have. I thought the best joke was Kentucky so adamant about not playing Murray State that they decided to lose to through the game. Yeah. But otherwise, they're sitting in a Sweet 16 with Purdue and Baylor's gone, and you know, like, this was their year, and they didn't get it done. If I'm Calipari next year, like, it's almost Final Four or I don't know what. I mean, it's hard to get a coach that can handle Kentucky like he can, the enormity, but you can't have these two seasons at Kentucky.
No, and that's, you know, look, the premise when he got there, it was going to be the ultimate recruiting monster, and then that was just going to churn out championships. We're now at 10 years and counting without a national championship. We're now at 7 years and counting without a Final Four. They had a very good team in 2020. They might have been a Final Four team if the pandemic hadn't wiped out that team. They've had some other good teams, but Kentucky, the standard is not, hey, let's go to the Sweet 16. The standard is let's go to the Final Four and let's win championships. And John Calipari's declining returns have been noticed within the state. Let's just say that.
Oh yeah. And he he goes with that. That's actually why he's good for the job, is that he doesn't shy away from that. He's not, right. I think I saw Chris Holtman talking the other day or after they lost to Villanova. It's hard to win games in this tournament. Like, dude, you're Ohio State.
Yeah.
I don't want to hear it.
You have the advantages. Use the advantages.
You're Ohio State. You got to make some sweeps. That's the one thing Calipari does that I think has always been best for, like, he's not sitting there going, oh, you guys just want to. It's like, no, this was unacceptable, but it's still unacceptable. So next year, I mean, next year is just, there can be no, they need a good regular season. And they need to win in March. I mean, they just, this, I would say Final Four, anything other than a Final Four next year is problematic for Calipari. You can't be at Kentucky that long. And like you said, the seventh, you know, they haven't been to a Final Four since the undefeated team, right?
Right. Since 2015.
Yeah. They lost to Wisconsin with that undefeated team.
Yeah. With Devin Booker sitting on the bench while the Harrison Twins dribbled out the shot clock three consecutive times.
Harrison Twins were, they're the curse of the Harrison Twins. All right, Sully, your turn in the woodshed.
Go ahead, Sully. Let's hear your feelings.
Explain yourself.
Honestly, after 30 minutes ago, I was really down. And then Nico Ima-Lieva, 5-star quarterback, number 9 in the country, just committed to Tennessee and Josh Heupel. So there are no worries anymore. It's a lot like Auburn and LSU. It is spring football season. It is baseball season. They're leading the country in home runs and RBIs right now. Everything's good. It's just fine. That was an awful loss. You're up by 6, under 10, and it was a tough blow to a yet another Rick Barnes team that had all the talent and all the makings to make a deep run and couldn't get it done, you know? And I was worried about the streakiness of this team, and they picked a hell of a time to have their worst 8-minute stretch in 2 months. So that's March sometimes.
Shoot 2 for 18 from 3-point range. You know, and that, again, Michigan was no ordinary 11 seed, but I mean, Tennessee, this was supposed to be the year, right? They had the breakthrough by winning the SEC tournament for the first time since 1979, and there's just no carryover here. And yes, the Rick Barnes record in March is problematic, extremely problematic. Yeah, that guy has had some great teams that have flamed out almost always in this round, the second round. I mean, he's had some brutal losses.
You said, you know, sometimes this happens in the tournament. It always happens with Rick Barnes.
Yeah.
There's the 2003 Texas Final Four team with T.J. Ford.
Love T.J. Ford.
He hasn't gotten past, he has a, since then he has two Sweet 16s, two Elite Eights. Everything else. Was it
Tim Floyd who just whipped the ass of the Kevin Durant team?
Kevin Durant's team. He's had tons of players. So next February, when you're all getting excited, Sully.
Yep. Keep it in check just a little bit, because you know what could be coming.
I don't know what happens, but that was a disaster.
Right. It is a disaster. You got to flip the page. It's year to year. And it is. It absolutely is. And I mean, we're talking about a program that's made 7 second weekends ever. So this is not a Kentucky situation where you're like, all right, Final Four or bust. They're still trying to make their first Final Four. They got a banner up. That was a hell of a season. Broke the SEC tournament curse. Next is the Final Four. Next time.
Yeah, I will say, Sully did get his back up a year or two ago when I laughed at him when he said that Tennessee could make the Final Four, because Tennessee never makes the Final Four. I'm still right on that, but I appreciate and actually respect your fan attitude of, hey, there's always next year, but even more importantly, there's spring football and there's recruiting and there's baseball. You can always direct your attention elsewhere.
Hey, when you get your first 5-star quarterback since 2002, that's a program changing deal. So I can get a little excited there.
Did you kick in on the collective? Did you kick in?
I did not kick in on the collective, but I will buy whatever shirt he comes out with. I'm sure there'll be a Nico shirt.
Send him some Zaxby's. That'll be your contribution.
He's actually playing down in Long Beach Poly, so I'm gonna be catching.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I'll be catching him this fall.
The Kevin Durant season. Yeah, that was Tim Floyd, USC.
Beat him by 19.
I mean, that was, you got Kevin Durant and you they lost 10 games. But yeah.
Not just Kevin Durant. You also had DJ Augustine, longtime pro point guard.
That's true. They had Augustine, you know? Incredible recruiting class. I was reminded over the weekend of Shaq's college career, which never got past the Sweet 16 either.
Right.
Shaq played three seasons at LSU.
The number of great players who played a long time in college, it's hilarious, really, looking back, if you applied today's standards to then.
Oh, yeah. Unbelievable.
Big Ten, not good.
No.
Bad. Not good. Purdue saved them, and Michigan. Clearly, the coaches need to smack more people in the handshake line. Worked for Coach Howard. He got that aggression out, had a little reflection time in the penalty box. And Michigan's in there. I thought they got a great draw, be honest with you. They're a good team. But Colorado State was not a whatever the hell they were.
No, that Colorado State, that was a great draw for Michigan because they had no interior guy that could even remotely deal with Dickinson.
And Tennessee has got Rick Barnes on the sideline. Purdue, though, it's wide open for Purdue. Seeds are gone. They get St. Peter's.
Yep. They are going to be at the pearly gates. I mean, they've got the chance here for Purdue. I wrote about 4,000 words on Purdue's star-crossed NCAA history last week, and they've had some bad luck, some bad injuries, some bad losses, and this team, I think, good enough and absolutely has the draw. If the toughest thing in your path to New Orleans is probably UCLA, you're willing to take that chance.
If you can get to a Sweet 16 with a 4-8 and a 15 seed there.
Yeah.
You got to make it. That's it. That's your good luck. So this is it. Matt Painter and Purdue. It's all right there for you. Couple more. Ken Palm hated Providence. Pat Forty hated Providence. Providence is right there.
I still don't love Providence
representing
that much.
The Dunkin' Donuts.
Can we talk about Providence for a second?
Yeah, go ahead.
Let's talk. Yeah.
They're in the Sweet 16. State,
yeah, they've beaten a 13 seed and a 12 seed. And we're all of a sudden now all of a sudden everyone was wrong about them because they beat two teams that if you'd beaten them in November, December, nobody would have even batted an eye. And the South Dakota State
Providence bias. You're biased against Providence.
No.
I said last week, no one could hate Providence. You hate Providence.
I don't hate Providence. And congratulations to them for winning both games. I did think they were going to lose to South Dakota State. So I was wrong there for sure. But in that South Dakota State game, when the lead got down to 3 at one point and they were like out, the shot clock was running out and they got a gift of a foul for a 3-point penalty or 3-point, 3 shots. And after that, that was one of those important foul calls in the course of a close game. So they got through that, and then, hey, they totally took care of business against Richmond, but so have many, many other teams this year taken care of business against Richmond.
Providence gets a chance to take on Kansas, so they will prove it one way or the other. Maybe my favorite bit of punditry this weekend was Rex Chapman talking about the great Providence team of the past in the 90s that featured Godsham God, and as he said, the late Pete Gillen.
Oh, that's right.
I felt very bad when I heard that because I didn't realize Pete Gillen had died. So turns Pete out Gillen, he hadn't.
No, Pete Gillen must have felt bad when he heard that.
Works for CBS with him. Well, so good job,
works,
buddy.
Yes, he
covers the tournament.
Yeah.
He was at work. I was like, what? Pete Gillen died? I thought I would have, that would have, like, you know, I mean, good guy. Rex needs, he's a little rough around the edges as an analyst. I think that was kind of the point, was to bring him in. He's a little rough around.
Unconventional,
okay. They had Huggins on there.
Huggins bringing the energy.
Huggins telling stories for like 5 minutes.
Yeah.
It's like Huggs is used to sitting around a bar, everyone listening.
Right. And he talks in his bar voice.
We got a commercial coming up here, Huggs. Let's make the point. But at least he didn't declare Pete Gillen dead.
No. So. Rule one, for Rex and everybody else, if you are in journalism or broadcasting anyway, don't kill somebody who's not dead.
Don't do it. All right, two more. Carolina almost blew it. What a game that was.
Oh, my God.
25 points. But they made it. They are, man, what a 180 that season has done from the walk-up to the Duke game to now.
I mean, everybody thought they were, at least everybody, myself certainly included, thought they would lose by 100 to Duke. They win that game, and that got them in the tournament. They may have been otherwise, but that definitely got them in. And then to have a number one seed beaten by 25 with 10 minutes to play and then end up in overtime. I mean, and you want to talk about some officiating. I'm sorry, but that was probably the worst officiated tournament game I've ever seen. The refs lost control so completely, and Baylor did the smart thing. Baylor's like, hey, we just got to press, and so we are running through people. We are hacking everyone. We are going over everyone's back. Dare you to call it. And they didn't 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 call it. And, I mean, it was mayhem. Absolute mayhem the last 10 minutes of that game. And if Baylor had won, and this is not, look, awesome character and effort from Baylor to come back and tie that game, but they got a lot of help doing it. And if Baylor had won, I just think would have felt very badly for this North Carolina team. North Carolina's gotten a million great whistles over the years. This was a very bad whistle that nearly cost them a humongous upset and a huge victory for Hubert Davis in his first year. So there was a little bit, I think, of karma in overtime there.
I think my favorite game of the year of the weekend was Gonzaga Memphis. Just from the jump, it was incredibly high level.
Yeah, great game.
Gonzaga wins it. Two things. One, the way Memphis played, I don't know that they don't beat everybody else in the NCAA tournament that day.
They were fantastic.
They were unbelievable. This was everything Penny was trying to put together. Just tremendous. Tremendous athletes, depth, defensive intensity, teamwork. I mean, they were great. I think they probably could have beaten anybody except Gonzaga. Gonzaga held on. And my point a couple weeks ago, where I wondered whether Drew Timmy was good. Okay, he was
I think
really
he's
good.
Answered you.
He was really good. He was really good. They don't win without him. But
25, man. 14, four assists, no turnovers for him in that game.
Yep. And,
so
and
far, he's been the best player in the tournament right now. So he's averaging 27.5 points, 13.5 rebounds. He's been great.
Big Chet.
Chet was not very good.
Not very good against that level of athlete.
Nope.
Real interesting as you look at the NBA. I don't know what to make of Chet Holmgren as an NBA player. It's all there, but then there's this. It's like 9 and 9, four blocks, but he probably like –
yeah,
because I mean, what they got over in Memphis, that's the entire league. Long, yes. Twitchy dudes coming at right. You full on. Yeah,
that's exactly right. And that he does. He's look, I mean, like his stat line against Georgia State was ridiculous. 19 points, 17 rebounds, 7 blocks, 5 assists. But that's Georgia State. And Memphis was a totally different level of athlete, as you said, and it was more of a struggle for him there.
Yeah, it was a lot of commercials when you're watching the NCAA basketball tournament. I have a few items. I don't know if you have any, Sully. Pat probably is like redoing stat lines or something during commercials, but I know you watch.
I did not pay super close attention, so you guys carry me.
I feel good about my Tyler selection as a breakout. Tyler from Wendy's, a breakout star, cracks me up every time. Doesn't say a lot. Not the only guy in the commercial, but like him. Sully, you got anybody?
Yeah, I still love the Nissan ones where they have all the different mascots, like they're going through the drive-through and the leprechaun mascot from Notre Dame's ordering chicken, and then the cocky's batting at him, and then he's got the Virginia Tech Hokie in the back. Love those little punny mascot. That's what it's all about right there.
I like
you get
the
to see teams that didn't even make it.
Yeah, yeah. What is that? They're in there. Also, when they're driving the car in their mascot hats, like their uniform, you know, the costume, and then it says underneath, like, "Don't try this at home. You're a professional driver on a car." Well, I go, okay, yeah, I was gonna get in the Sparty. I'm a Sparty, the Spartan outfit, and drive down the I-75.
Yeah. We want no part of your lawsuit when you say you got this idea from our commercial.
Good. Yeah. Lily from AT&T skipped out on work to go to the March Madness.
Oh, that was that bit.
Okay. That was the bit. So she's trying to get Coach K. I don't know if I feel good about Lily having an outside life. I think she should just stay at the AT&T store.
She's worked there for 10 years and has never gotten promoted.
Yeah, she's still there, never gotten promoted, and now apparently she saved up enough for some March Madness tickets, and she's
good for
but
her.
She's I don't know if I feel about that.
Everyone needs a work-life balance, Dan. I don't think you should regret her or resent her ability to have some fun outside of the office.
It's really not.
What, Coach K was trying to get a job, like being
Yeah, because he's almost unemployed. He needs to have some free time, but he didn't. Well, she wasn't stirred. Matt Stafford was there. Yet. That was clever. Yeah, there's a lot there. Geico has got this commercial with the Gecko, whatever, is at a diner with a woman and they're talking.
Oh, yeah.
If you watch closely, the introvert, she has a cup of coffee and a plate and a basket of French fries. That's her order. She's drinking black coffee and eating French fries. She's carb and caffeine loading.
That's a bold strategy.
I don't know what, if I see that in a diner, I'm like psycho.
That's some red flags. That's some chaotic energy right there.
She's going through things that packaging home and auto is not going to fix. I don't know what it is. I need an origin story on the woman who has a basket of fries and a cup of black coffee.
Packaging home and auto is not going to fix. Well, it's a good start. It could be a start, you know. Every person's journey to personal self-actualization, you know, has to start somewhere. Hers might start with packaging home and auto.
Do we have any least favorite? I'm done with the Coca-Cola commercials.
That's a weird commercial.
And they have, like, the Jeepers Creepers music playing over in the background. Like, I'm watching basketball. I don't need to hear this horror music.
I don't really not big on soda anyway, but like when you want me to try different Cokes that taste all the same to decide which one's the best, it's like, really? This is too much work.
They're so bad. I want the orange vanilla Coke back from the last 3 years that they blasted at us.
They tried that. They did try the orange vanilla hard, and that didn't really get very far.
How is the progressive guy helping young homeowners not become their parents? Not a 13 episode sitcom on CBS with a laugh.
Seriously,
track?
Now that could be and should be. There are parts of those that I think are very funny.
That's tremendous. That guy. Yeah. What is this? What like that? That should be a sitcom.
Don't talk about leaving before the third quarter. That's right.
Could be a whole episode.
The one where they were removing the garden gnomes or whatever. Like that.
I'm available to write this thing up. Just hit my call my people.
Yeah.
I don't know. All right. I have some more later. I have a great story later, but we did want to get to this because there are other NCAA championships this weekend. I, for one, watched a bunch of the wrestling. Congratulations to Penn State. Which won the wrestling title. I don't know if you ever watch wrestling, but it's
a great sport. I mean, it's captivating. It is hard sport. Jeez Louise, that's hard.
Oh, these guys, I mean, the effort and the emotion. I mean, it's just you. There's nothing.
Yeah.
Man on man from the caves. The sport came from the cavemen. So it's like, this is it. Me, you, we weigh exactly the same. Let's go. Like such a tough sport, but Penn State won it. They dominated. I thought that was good. And then, of course, you were at the swimming. I believe this is your last swimming NCAA swimming championships. And how blessed are you as a sport parent that this is actually a thing? Your last one with your children in it. And Brooke won one national title as part of what relay was it?
The 800 freestyle relay.
800 freestyle relay. Congratulations. Can you imagine that? National champion.
Thank you. Yep. It's awesome.
Swimming's a weird sport. There's so many events that people like one doesn't get celebrated enough.
Yeah, well, I know. No, I mean, the vast majority of college swimmers, A, don't get to the championships, and B, don't win when they get there. So she's been very, very fortunate and very good. And so, yeah, she leaves with five national championships, three relay, two individual, and then two team championships, too.
Good Lord. All right. There you go. Make us all feel useless. obviously, though, the story of the swimming was Leah Thomas, the Penn swimmer, the transgender swimmer, who won one event and then finished off the podium in another and then last in a whole other one.
Not off the podium, and we'll get to that. We'll get to that, but just keep that thought.
But just tell me this. What was the scene there? Because I thought the coverage was a little lacking. It was either people screaming that Leah Thomas shouldn't be there or screaming that she should, but not enough about, like, this had to just been a surreal, like, unbelievable thing. Like, just this moment, whether you agree, disagree, or in the middle, like, what? A totally different situation, but, like, it was like the Russian figure skater last Olympics that was, like, whether you agree that that she should skate or not, like what pressure? Like, I don't know. There's just what a scene. What was it like inside the swimming facility when Leah Thomas, lined up to race during, after? What was the crowd like? Take us there, Pat.
Yeah. I mean, it was definitely unlike any swimming event that I've been to before. There was obviously a lot more media attention than anywhere other than the Olympics or maybe the Olympic trials. And it was a very fraught atmosphere outside, although not quite as hostile as I was perhaps ready for and the Georgia Tech was ready for, because they had major security, and I was fine with that. So the actual, atmosphere, swimming, probably like a lot of other Olympic sports, is generally like rah-rah for everyone. And so everyone is being introduced for the championship final, the 500 freestyle. Leah is the top seed. My daughter was the fifth or sixth seed. She didn't have a very good morning swim, but she got in the final. And they introduce everybody. And I actually, it was a palpable difference, but I was happy that it was not a nasty scene. There was a lot of applause for seven women and not very much applause at all for one. And while that's a lonely feeling for Leah Thomas, it was better than booing. It was better than name calling. There was some person who I think yelled out cheater, but that was one person. Apparently, I didn't see it, but there were people who turned their backs when she was introduced. But here's the thing. As usual, Dan, we can take lessons from the young people themselves. The people that were competing against Leah treated her with respect. My daughter was next to her in the preliminaries, was beaten pretty handily by her, shook her hand. Erica Sullivan, who came in second in the finals, shook her hand. There was the other people that were a lot more upset and angry, for the most part, from what I could see and tell, than the actual competitors in the pool with her. So it was a very interesting scene. And then as the meet went along, like, there was resentment, there was anger that she won. And then there was outsized applause when they introduced them. They introduced 8-1. And that's so this podium idea that it's 1, 2, 3? No, wrong. It's 1 through 8. Everyone stands up there.
Everyone's on the podium if you make the finals, right?
Top, yeah. Yes, everyone who makes the final. There's not a gold, silver, bronze. Everybody gets a trophy 1 through 8. So there was huge applause for Emma Wyant, who was second in the 500 freestyle from Virginia. There was very little applause again for Leah. Now, you go to the 200 freestyle, Leah Thomas gets beaten. Taylor Ruck of Stanford, one of Brooks' good friends and teammates, wins the event. Huge applause for Taylor Ruck for winning that event. Some people felt like that was a statement. Leah, I think, was fifth in that. And then the 100 freestyle, Leah was eighth. Yeah, so here's, the thing was, like, for people that were prophesying that she was going to come in there, trample everyone, rewrite the rule book or the record book, that didn't happen. She did win. Her time in the final freestyle was good, but not spectacular. When Brooke won the 500 freestyle in 2019, her time was 2.5 seconds faster than what Leah went. So if my daughter had swam her lifetime best, she would have won. The winner last year was faster than what Leah Thomas went. Then again, she did not win the 200 free. This is a hard meet, and Leah Thomas not used to competing. She has not competed in NCAA championships before. The swimmers who have been there before and been through this grind, 4 days, boom, 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 handled it better. Clearly seemed to get tired, and maybe some of that was psychic weight. I mean, I'm sure it was not easy being her in this meet, but this did not overthrow women's sports. At least the results of this did not.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, we've discussed this repeatedly on this podcast. I understand the position that Leah broke no rules. The rules are there and all of that. I think the rules should be changed, but I completely reject the notion that you can be in favor of different rules that set up to be, there is a distinct advantage that Leah Thomas had because she was transgender and believing that there should be, a different set of rules than you're transphobic or whatever. You can want all of the benefits, kids who are transgender and adults, and avoid the suicide rates, the drug and alcohol abuse, all the different things, and still say, hey, look, I just don't think this is fair. So my position was that. But, one of the problems, I think, is it just became this, it's an easy touchstone. And it's like, well, it's one or the other, right? I just reject that notion. I have to 100% agree with it all. That's great if other people want to. And a number of this, Brooke and other swimmers, there was a really good piece on Newsweek. That's fine. You can have a difference of opinion. This is a tricky issue. I'm sorry. It's just not a black and white issue. At the same time, you don't have, I don't want to be lined up with the people that are just bigots and are creeped out about this or something like that. And there was a lot of that.
I don't want to be lined up with anybody on this. Yeah. Really. I mean, my own opinion. It is complicated. Again, she should be treated with respect and inclusion. I don't think it's a level playing field. I've said that before on this podcast. Watch Leah Thomas swim. I've watched all these kids swim for a gazillion years. I don't think it was a completely level playing field. And I think, yes, there will be rule changes. This is an NCAA problem. It's not a Leah Thomas problem. It's an NCAA problem. This is a slow, reactive, scared organization that didn't want to touch this, didn't see it coming until it was too late, had outdated policies, and now will change them because they threw this to USA Swimming. USA Swimming says, okay, here's what we're going to do. And then they're like, oh, well, we're not ready to do that yet. Well, okay, fix it going forward. This is not the end of women's sports, but let's fix the situation that was not in as good a position as it should be.
All right. One of the issues that came up is it just becomes political fodder, right? So a picture emerges over the weekend of three female swimmers, including Brooke Forty, in a picture. It's a big picture of Leah standing in first spot on the podium. And then down, there's a little gap and three, I think two, three, four, or whatever it was, grouped together. And got they're getting their own little photo taken, and it is deemed a protest in one of these social media. You know, these things have no context, no facts behind them. It's just, look, there was a protest. The other, the female swimmers, the traditional female swimmers, protesting this, and all, and it wasn't that. And it is literally what I hate about American politics, and it's conservatives and liberals. You just take whatever little thing you have that you think supports your opinion, and you just go with it, whether there's context, whether there's it's accurate, whatever. You don't care about the fallout and all that. So I am correct, am I not, that this was not a protest? This was three friends getting their pictures taken because they're all on top of, they're all there.
Yeah. Yeah. So here's the thing. And this, yes, to your point, the political fringes in this country, and I'm sure others who have used social media for such dishonest, divisive means, this is like one of the great examples I've ever seen of it, because I fully understand the full context here and the full story. And when Donald Trump Jr. puts, I think it was on Instagram, that this picture says everything about how people really feel about Leah Thomas, let me tell you how people really feel about it, including my daughter, and how that picture came to be. They have the 1 through 8, okay, and then the 5, 6, 7, 8 leave the podium. 2, 3, and 4, Emma Wyatt, Erica Sullivan, Brooke Forty, friends, Olympic teammates, Olympic suite mates, hadn't seen each other since Tokyo. You know, bonded on that trip and on that team. Hey, can we get a picture together? Erica Sullivan gets the Texas photographer. Can we get this picture together? So that was the small angle picture. Now, the further out angle picture is Leah Thomas being ostracized on the side while these other three are there. And I actually saw them getting together for the photo from the stands. And I said, ooh, don't do that, because I just saw the bigger look of it, you know, but that they had no intent whatsoever. Now, the hilarious thing about this, and the number of people I have seen on social media say, this is how the women really feel. Well, as we said on this podcast, we read my daughter's statement, which was supporting Leah Thomas's inclusion in the NCAA championships, and said she, quote, had no problem competing against Leah. Erica Sullivan is the person who wrote that Newsweek story, yes, that you referenced. Proudly, outspokenly gay woman who said, I have no problem with Leah Thomas being in this race and in this competition.
Not even no problem. That story celebrated it.
Yes.
It's not even like, hey, whatever, right? And neither was Brooke. That's the thing. And again, they're taking positions that I don't necessarily agree with, but that's their position. It's great. Everyone should have a position. Go ahead.
Yeah. And so now, but to now ascribe that as a mean girl protest to Leah Thomas is the most dishonest thing I've ever been a part of, because it's not. And that is a major problem in our society, and a major problem of using social media to falsely influence people with things. And I mean, the number of people that have taken that and, you know, sent me that picture, like, you're a terrible father for not sticking up for your daughter. First of all, my daughter speaks for herself and speaks really well for herself. She's 23 years old. She's going to graduate from Stanford with 2 degrees. She's already spoken about this. She's the one in the water. She can handle this. And if we're really about protecting women, why do you want a man to have to stand up for the woman to speak? The women are doing just fine. They're okay. Again, watch the women who are competing. Watch them in the water. Watch how they interact with Leah Thomas. Judge from them, not from what somebody thinks that they're reacting about or should be reacting to.
Brooke Forty has got 2 degrees from Stanford and you're co-hosting the stupid ass podcast. What do we
mean? Why do you want me to speak for her?
If we could get a different 40 on here, we would take her.
You're a better podcast.
We need a 40. You're right now. You're our top choice, but only because of availability and interest in doing it.
That's right.
You can be replaced. Well, it was a wild swimming final, but yeah, that was disturbing and disappointing and completely expected. I mean, it's absolutely, yeah. You see it all the time. So someone said this and then you kind of look into it. Well, it's not quite what someone said, or this bill says this. It's it's not really what the,
I will say, just real quick. I'll say my wife had the best perspective on it too. Because Brooke brought it up. It's like, man, I can't believe that picture has caused this furor. And Trisha said, the only person, if you feel, you don't have to explain to anybody except maybe Leah Thomas. If Leah Thomas is unhappy, then tell her, hey, that's not what we intended. Otherwise, none of your business.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's almost like you can't fight it anyway. They don't care. It's supposed to create an instantaneous reaction and just move on. It's not, it has nothing to do with any of it. So Texas AD Chris Del Conte fogged in, had some plane trouble getting out of Austin. So decided to drive it with his son and a Texas fan, a Texas fan and the Texas fan's son, 18 hours to Milwaukee.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Oh,
and try to do it. So they give it a shot. Texas fan Patrick Smith and his son Hodges and then Del Conte were going to go. So
is Patrick Smith a big donor? Do we know?
He's known as Wheels to his friends. Trio climbed Del Conte's Ford F-250 pickup and left Austin by mid-morning. At least that's the best as he remembers. There is he took a bunch of pictures. He kind of did it along on Twitter. So Del Conte's really funny. As they went, he said, I don't even know the rows. Del Conte said, you just press the buttons and the little lady on the machine tells you where to go. I got pulled over in Oklahoma. I look over and he says, how fast you going? I'm not really sure. He goes, it's 45, but you're going 60. But he said, keep it straight and walked away. An Oklahoma trooper did me a solid.
That's a Red River rarity right there.
He heard we were going to the SEC and he said, good work, buddy, and let me go. Del Conte said his problem was his bladder is the size of a walnut. So every 2 hours he has to stop.
Okay.
Let's see.
They had a hot tub. They had a hot tub in the middle of the room.
Yeah. They got a room
when they got there to Milwaukee.
Yeah.
No, it was a quick stop at like hour 12.
And pull up at 12 o'clock. I said, hey man, I just need two rooms, please. The guy goes, okay. One had a hot tub. He says, please, no essential oils in the hot tub. I'm like, what are you talking about? He has a picture of the room. It does have that. That thing needs a serious scrubbing before I'm even going near it. The honeymoon suite at the
Quality Inn,
something. Anyway,
Illinois.
He made it. His mistake was driving his own car because then you got to drive back. Well,
exactly.
Should have rented. Right?
Oh my goodness, CDC. That's some extra effort. And then you're there to see your team get punched out in the second round by Purdue.
Shouldn't he have his own plane or something like that?
Something.
Come on, Longhorns. All right, briefly in sort of football news, Arkansas is in the Sweet 16, so I guess we can make it basketball. Good job by Arkansas. But we'll get to you guys when we get to the Sweet 16 part. Football coach Sam Pittman. Coach Sam Pittman added a little statue. This thing is quite a thing to his house. Have you seen these pictures, Pat, of the Razorback statue? It's really a monument to Razorbacks.
Really?
It's a water feature. It seems like the water runs out of this incredible hog's mouth on the side of his. It's overlooking a lake. Coach Sam Pittman, huge thank you to my friend Brandon White for such a wonderful job. Hashtag the hog is strong.
The hog is strong.
That's hashtag, a good hashtag turn that damn jukebox on. Does this thing play music? I don't.
That was his thing.
I don't know.
That was his thing after they turn that music jukebox on and they start dancing or whatever.
This thing is a monstrous statue. It's like a statue in his yard for the Hogs. Now, granted, the Hogs are paying him a lot of money, but
they're paying him a lot of money and he lives in Northwest Arkansas. He needs to spend it on something. So, you know, create a monument to the Hogs.
This thing is awesome.
Yeah, this is Michelangelo reincarnated.
Statue of David, except for a statue of Porky.
Of Hoggies. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
This is an example of someone with too much money, and I love it. I'm here for it. And how about this Brandon White guy just waiting his whole life for a chance to make a huge hog waterfall monument?
Well, it's not the first one in that area. Now, they have one on campus, the Wild Band of Razorbacks Monument Fountain, which has like five running hogs, you know, going over the top of a little waterfall. So they are very much into their pig iconography and statues there.
I'm all about it. Honor the pig. It's a noble creature.
Hey, and you know,
I just remembered. How about speaking of pigs, we had a pig bear attack.
What? That's true. Yeah, a bear jumped in a pig pen. And the two pigs fought them away.
Yeah, really?
They ran.
They fought off the bear?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they fought off the bear.
Is that Arkansas too?
I don't know. He was going for some bacon and it didn't happen.
Wow. It's in Connecticut.
Connecticut. Wow. I would kind of think the Northeast hogs would be a little soft, but no. Apparently not.
Hell no.
Like I said on Twitter, this poor bear guy, he's going to go back to his buddies and he'll be like, hey, what'd you eat for dinner? I'm like, actually, I skipped out on it because I tried to eat these pigs and they actually beat the hell out of me.
He almost had an absolutely fantastic dinner. That's the thing. Yeah. Like, he had a chance. Right? He wimped away.
Probably shouldn't have tried to go one on two.
No. You know? All right. Then speaking of dinner, the chicken wars are still going on, but we have a new thing. We have the fish sandwich war. Yeah. You know, it's Lent. You know, a lot of Catholics won't eat a meat on Friday. So fish fries are big. And obviously fish, the Filet-O-Fish is the king of the fish sandwich, whether it deserves it or not.
Popeyes has also released a fish sandwich recently.
Popeyes is out with a fish sandwich. Mm-hmm. I think we mentioned the fish sandwich wars are heating up. Well, our friends at Arby's have employed the rapper Pusha T. If you remember Pusha T,
of course,
is a rapper. It's worked with the, you know, had some feuds with Drake and Lil. It's Pusha T put out a diss track. He said, Arby's paid me, but I would say this anyway. So this is the Arby's spicy fish diss track. Sully, will you play the song for everybody? This is a Pusha T. It's something. I listen to it. It's something. Hit it, Sully.
I'm the reason the whole world love it. Now I gotta crush it. Filet your fishes. Then you should be disgusted. How dare you sell a square fish asking us to trust it? A half slice of cheese, Mickey D's on a budget. Arby's crispy fish is simply it. With lines round the corner, we might need a guest list. Exit stage left, the sandwiches taste fresh. A little cube of fish from a clown is basic. Say less, this argument is baseless. Drowned in tartar, that Filet-O-Fish is tasteless. See, Arby's only deals in the greatness. I bet the house on it like it's Vegas. Look, I could sell water to a whale. How could you ever think I'd fail? Yeah, the crispy fish sandwich blazing trails. The mother clown's just too frail. Yeah, if you know me and you know me well, our fish is gonna tip that scale.
All right. Pusha T going after McDonald's there. Yes.
So how do you expect me to trust a square fish?
He's got a point there.
I mean,
point.
He does.
Got a point on that. Arby's going to be so popular. You need a guest list. What is he? Don't take a fish from a clown. Pat, will you go get the spicy fish sandwich? Because Pusha T.
Because Pusha T told me to? He pushed it on me? No.
I mean, really, I don't know how much he's saying that the Arby's is that good. He's just saying Filet-O-Fish sucks, and I kind of agree. I don't eat the Filet-O-Fish, so.
I eat no fast food fish, period. So Pusha T and Arby's and McDonald's are all out of luck with me there. However, I am inspired by the fact that they would even come up with the idea of let's do a diss track. Let's see, who can we get? Like he's sitting in the boardroom. Okay. How are we going to sell? Well, we're going to do a diss track. We're going to go after McDonald's. Okay. Who are we going to get? Pusha T. And somebody's like, yes, go get Pusha T. And how much does it cost to get Pusha T these days to do a diss track for Arby's? I don't know. I need information on this.
Probably available.
I got to try it. I got to try it now.
You're going to do it? All right, Sully, you test it out. I don't like the fish sandwich at all. I agree. What's with the piece of cheese on the Filet-O-Fish is particularly worrisome.
We know you're not going anywhere near tartar sauce because that's in the mayonnaise family. No. So.
Yeah. Sorry.
I used to get a salmon biscuit with a slice of cheddar cheese in high school before from a local restaurant. And it was...
Salmon?
It was a questionably... frozen salmon patty fried and put on a biscuit with some cheese, and it was actually good.
Let's recap a questionably frozen salmon patty in Chattanooga, Tennessee.
Yeah,
so the salmon, the nearest salmon is like probably up northeast coast, Maine up there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. Good luck.
Do not trust the salmon patties.
So,
farm.
I'm not worried
farm
about
to table.
My stomach.
Farm to table.
That's right. Farm to table.
They don't say how long in between. Everything's farm to table, right?
Well, pretty much.
Right. Sully, have you ever had anything at a fast food place that you didn't think was at least?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I'm not a big Del Taco guy. I feel like that's a little overrated. If I'm going to get it,
all right. Hold on. I don't think it's really rated.
No, people love it out here.
I don't.
People love Del Taco.
People love it out here over Taco Bell, and I'm like, I am a Taco Bell guy. If I'm going to get just absolutely obliterated in just nasty fake cheese, I'm going to go to Taco Bell.
Yeah, yeah, I'll run for the border for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Del Taco. Huh. Okay.
Mm-mm. All right. Well, Pusha T, we appreciate you. Good. Good. Still speaking the truth to power.
I'm still recovering from that spicy Arby's chicken sandwich. So I'm a little intimidated, honestly, about this guy.
I could go back to the Memphis, Indiana truck stop Arby's maybe and try this fish sandwich, or maybe not.
Or not. All right. That's our pod. We'll be back later this week. We'll preview the Sweet 16. We'll get into the matchups. If we didn't get to your favorite team, so be it. Anyway,
we will eventually. We'll pick the rest of the games, right? 8 games Thursday, Friday. We'll pick them.
We'll pick them. There you go. All right. Appreciate everyone listening. We will talk to you later.